This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Sidney Milkus is the White Burkett Miller Professor of Politics at the University of Virginia and the Assistant Director for Academic Programs at the Miller Center of Public Affairs, online at millercenter.org. His new book is Theodore Roosevelt, The Progressive Party and the Transformation of American Democracy. It is an honor to welcome live in studio Sidney Milkus. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Coy. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming in. I've really been looking forward to this.
Me too.
I like many people, and obviously yourself, find Theodore Roosevelt absolutely fascinating and somebody who just hasn't gotten, I think, enough attention from scholars and historians. There's just so little we really know about him in this day and age. But before we get into that, share with us, if you can, first, just a Sidney Milkus 101, a little bit about yourself and where you're from and how you ended up at UVA.
Yeah, it's not nearly as interesting as Teddy Roosevelt's life. I grew up, Coy, in Philadelphia, and I'm still a strong partisan of Philadelphia, particularly Philadelphia sports.
And
a Philly boy through and through. And you can't take Charlottesville will not cleanse me of that. I went to undergraduate school at Muhlenberg College in Allentown, where I met Carol, whom I hope is listening to our show today. And the dedication is in large part to her, my long suffering pal, Carol, who sits through 10 years of my writing books like this. I went to graduate school at the University of Pennsylvania. Taught at in Indiana for a bit at DePauw University with a W, not an L.
Yeah.
And then I went to Brandeis University in 1985, and was there for quite a bit. And then in 1999 I was drawn to Mr. Jefferson's University.
Wonderful.
I've been here ever since.
Good
and
deal.
And mostly happily so.
Good deal.
For a northern boy, I'm pretty happy here in the South.
So, what's your particular focus as a professor of politics? Uh-huh. Is it this period in American history?
Yeah, I love writing about American political history, but I'm a political scientist, so there's kind of a concern about the present in my work. So, what I try to do, I hope this doesn't come across as too pretentious, is I'm really interested in the deep historical roots of contemporary developments in American politics. And one of the things that drew me to Theodore Roosevelt and this project was that a lot of the things that we consider so new in American politics, for example, the assault on political parties and interest groups, the notion that business is run by the malefactors of great wealth, the notion that the president is the embodiment of public opinion, a lot of that has its critical beginning in Teddy Roosevelt's Progressive Party campaign of 1912. And that campaign was sort of the culmination, the climax of a period of reform that went back to the 1890s. We call the Progressive Era.
Yeah, very interesting. The new book is Theodore Roosevelt and the Progressive Party and the Transformation of American Democracy. We're talking with UVA's Sidney Milkus this hour on Charlottesville Right Now, and the phone lines are always open for you at 977-1070. Don't hesitate to join the conversation at any time. Sidney, I was talking with my brother recently, and he was sharing with me, his thoughts about how America is at such a dangerous time. It's so torn, and people are angry, and you see people screaming at these town hall meetings, and there's just such this divide that separates America on these issues, and he was so upset by it and so moved by it. Mm-hmm. And I said, there is nothing more American than that divide. I mean, that's Jefferson Hamilton.
Yeah.
This is in our blood as Americans. This is what it means to be American, is to recognize the fact that we do have that divide. Mm-hmm. It is nothing new. It's always been there, hasn't it?
It has always been there. One of the objectives of Roosevelt and the Progressive Era was to revitalize democracy in the face of what they felt was its diminishment because of the Industrial Revolution and also the development of party politics that had come in their eyes kind of boss-driven politics that had sort of blocked the American people out. So many of the reforms they pursued were pursued with the desire to bring the American people back into the political process and do it in a way that had a more national and presidential focus than Jefferson advocated. Jefferson liked democracy to take place in small places. Roosevelt and the progressives believed that was no longer possible. Jefferson, in a sense, had to be upgraded, or we had to rethink Hamilton. There had to be a more national presidential focus on American politics. And so this debate we're now having about things like Iraq and Afghanistan and healthcare and its passion and its moralism, I think that would make Teddy Roosevelt very happy.
Yeah, that the nation was participating in this great debate.
Yeah, and it's going on not just with President Obama's speech tonight, which is very important, and Teddy Roosevelt is really a pioneer in developing the importance of the president speaking directly to the American people or presidential candidates. But also there was the hope that this would stimulate activity in communities, that the people in communities would be aroused by important national issues. And so the fact that we have town hall meetings in Charlottesville that are very passionate wouldn't disturb Teddy Roosevelt, I don't think.
Yeah.
And quite the contrary, I think it would show him, hey, we didn't do such a bad job.
We're talking with UVA's Sidney Milkus. The new book is Theodore Roosevelt, the Progressive Party, and the Transformation of American Democracy. Sidney, tell us about Theodore Roosevelt. Who was this guy? What's his story?
Yeah, there's been tons and tons of biographies of him, rightfully so, Coy, because he's an interesting guy. I mean, he was from New York, and lived. There's an estate still in Oyster Bay in which he lived. He comes from a very wealthy family, a family of merchants. His father was also involved in politics and Republican politics in the post-Civil War political machinations.
Yeah.
And Roosevelt was very sickly and puny as a child, but his father loved him anyway. But Roosevelt... Teddy Roosevelt was not satisfied with this and felt he had to transcend himself. And so he threw himself into an incredibly difficult physical regimen and actually got beyond his sickness and became a very vigorous sportsman as well as a very vigorous politician.
What was the sickness? Do we know what he was suffering from?
Well, he suffered from asthma, and he was just... I think that was his greatest torment. But he's also just a very weak individual. Someone you would never have thought would one day be conducting boxing matches, participating in boxing matches.
Yeah.
So he was
the classic kid from the cartoon on the back of the comic book that started off as a scrawny weakling and ended up as the...
he was a nerd like Sid Milkus. But unlike Sid Milkus, he transcended himself. Now, that always stayed with him. And when he got involved in politics, a big part of his message was, just as I transcended myself, although he didn't put it quite that immodestly, America must transcend themselves as well. And we must move from a country that was pretty important and significant in the 19th century, but basically isolated and committed to our local communities and our individual property and our families, into a great community.
Yeah.
A great country that was committed to industrial reform at home and the righteous use of force abroad. That notion of transcendence that he developed in his childhood was an important part of his politics.
How did he get into politics? I mean, did he have a career and then decide to go into politics, or was he in it from day one?
Partly through his father, that his father was active in politics. But so there was kind of natural access to him. But a lot of the people from Roosevelt's background thought politics was unsavory, was too compromised, immoral. There was a particularly important group at the end of the 19th century that referred to themselves as mugwumps, or they were called mugwumps because half of their wump was on one side of the fence and the other on the other side of the fence. They were people who would not participate in politics. And Roosevelt was scornful of them. And he became... a reform but active Republican at the end of the 19th century, partly because of his connections, family connections, and political connections, he was appointed by McKinley as Assistant Secretary of the Navy, and was a strong advocate, as I said before, of America playing a strong role in the world, and was a strong advocate of our getting into the Spanish-American War, much more than McKinley, much more aggressive, and a strong advocate of our becoming an imperialistic nation, although he didn't put it that way.
Yeah, interesting.
When he was Assistant Secretary of the Navy and the war broke out, he decided, I ain't sitting at any desk. That's not the Theodore Roosevelt I've become. So he quit his job and asked McKinley if he could go form a group of volunteers, the Rough Riders, and go fight in the Spanish-American War. And, of course, the lore of the charge up San Juan Hill.
And is that lore hyperbolic, or was he really some kind of a hero in battle?
Well, to me, you know, to an academic, just the fact that he went up, that he formed this regiment and went to Cuba and stormed up San Juan Hill, that in and of itself is real enough. I think because of his great promotional skills, Roosevelt was the first national political actor to really develop extraordinary self-promotional skills. He exaggerated what a hero he was at San Juan Hill. And there's some controversy because there was a black regiment that was part of that storming, and apparently they didn't get enough credit for that great triumph.
I never heard that. Interesting.
Yeah.
And, of course, we beat Spain and gave Cuba a new boss.
and Roosevelt became a great hero as a result of the Spanish-American War. And he was elected as governor of New York in 1899, when McKinley was running for re-election, he was looking for a new vice presidential candidate, and the more conventional politicians in New York were anxious to kick Roosevelt upstairs, and partly because McKinley somewhat reluctantly saw Roosevelt as someone who would add useful energy to his administration. Roosevelt became the vice presidential candidate. And no sooner had McKinley been reelected.
He was shot, right?
He was shot in Buffalo at the American Expedition, and Teddy Roosevelt becomes president of the United
States.
How
old was he?
41, the youngest person ever to become president of the United States.
And so we're talking with Sidney Milkus. The new book is Theodore Roosevelt, The Progressive Party and the Transformation of American Democracy. We're honored to have him live in studio. The phone lines are always open at 977-1070. So he goes in and replaces
McKinley,
becomes president, the youngest president in the history of America. What was his vision? I mean, did he have an agenda right away, or was he a blank slate?
He wasn't.
Clearly, he was something of an imperialist already, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a strong commitment to foreign policy. McKinley was really modest in his commitment to foreign policy. And it's wrong to say he was brought into the Spanish-American War kicking and screaming, but the major impetus came from people like Roosevelt in the administration and the Congress.
He was a real hawk, Roosevelt.
Whereas Roosevelt was committed to a notion of manifest destiny that starts with the Jacksonians, but the Jacksonians' notion of manifest destiny was to extend the country to the West Coast, and that's what the Mexican War was all about in the 1840s. The progressives like Roosevelt, and the progressives were somewhat split on this notion of what to do about foreign policy, just as their successors, liberals, are today. Roosevelt and progressives of his stripe believed that the righteous use of force had to go beyond the American landscape and had to be used abroad.
Yeah.
And so he pursues a very aggressive of foreign policy, not messianic. I mean, there's a sense of real politic to it. In fact, Roosevelt, during his presidency, negotiated a peace settlement in a war between Japan and Russia that won him the Nobel Prize. He was the first American to win.
I never knew that.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's very aggressive, but at the same time, I think President Obama quoted him in one of the debates with McCain. He's known for that African proverb, speak softly and carry a big stick. Theodore Roosevelt.
So that was an African proverb before Roosevelt used it.
Really?
So
he had a notion of manifest destiny in foreign policy.
So there was this idea then when he becomes president that he really believed that you could spread democracy at the end of a gun, that this is just something that we can do.
Exactly. And there were other progressives who would form an uneasy partnership with him from time to time in his presidency and his post-presidency, who believed with Jefferson that the way to spread American ideals was not through with the so-called righteous use of force, but by example,
right?
Or through international organizations.
Yeah. So when Jefferson said that the democracy would be, I think there's one letter where he refers to it as democracy and freedom would be like a ball that would just roll around the world.
Exactly.
Didn't mean that we would take guns with us. It would just people would see what we're doing and be so moved by our example that they would want to emulate the American model.
Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt thought they need a little more encouragement than that. And so did a lot of other progressives. And again, to them, this is not imperialism. This is the righteous use of force.
Which is a very different thing.
Yeah, to make sure that the ideals we believed in could be extended abroad. As Wilson would later put it, another progressive who actually won the election of 1912, the world had to be made safe for democracy.
Interesting. We are talking with Sidney Milkus of the University of Virginia. His new book is Theodore Roosevelt, The Progressive Party and the Transformation of American Democracy. Sidney, when we get back, let's listen to a clip of President Theodore Roosevelt, and we'll explore this the 1912 presidential campaign. After he served as president, he came back on the scene as a third-party candidate. And tell us a little bit, we'll explore this idea of the progressives and who they were and how this has shaped the democracy in the America that we know today. Okay. We're talking with Sidney Milkus. We're back in just a few minutes after a break for local news and weather. This is Charlottesville Right Now. With UVA's Sidney Milkus, his new book is Theodore Roosevelt, The Progressive Party and the Transformation of American Democracy. Sidney, before we listen to Theodore Roosevelt, tell us about the end of his presidency and take us up to this 1912 election when he sort of came back on the world stage.
Yeah. Well, let me mention before getting into some specifics on the end of his presidency that one of the reasons Roosevelt and his progressive allies felt the U.S. should get more involved in foreign affairs because they had emerged as a great industrial power and thus had a responsibility to play that role. But to be a great industrial power, industrialism had to work in a fair fashion. And so Roosevelt also had a strong domestic commitment to what he called the square deal, which was to make sure that the economy worked in a way that was fair not only to those who owned businesses, but also to those who worked for these employers. And the great object of his reform were the giant corporations, which formed for the first time in American politics at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century, the so-called trusts.
Yeah.
And Roosevelt was the first president to call for a pretty strong program of reform. He's not really a trust buster, as lore has it, because he didn't really believe you could break them up, but he believed you should regulate them, not only in economic matters, but also in environmental matters. Roosevelt gives life to a strong conservation movement.
Yeah.
But he never got to complete that industrial reform during his presidency. And as he was warming up to it towards the end of his second term, there was some thought that he would run again in 1908, because after all, there was no two-term limit then. This is before the 22nd. In fact, Roosevelt had not served two full terms, remember.
He was not elected president the first time.
But Roosevelt announced something soon after he was reelected in 1904, which he regretted the rest of his life. He said, since I served so much of this first term, McKinley was shot, after all, pretty soon after he was reelected, and I will serve, 4 years as my second term. I will leave the presidency after my second term. And I'm sure he felt tempted to run again.
Could he have been elected in
any way? Oh, absolutely. I mean,
so Roosevelt, he was a popular...
Roosevelt was extraordinarily popular. And he dominates his political age in a way that no other president has done in our in the 20th century.
That's very different, Sidney, from most presidents who serve two terms. Even Jefferson, the second is never as good as the first and often ruins their reputation, and they sort of go out, not as near as successful as they came in. But if I hear you right, his second was just as successful as the first.
Maybe he thought that would happen, knowing his history. And Roosevelt was a great historian. He was a historian. He wrote a lot of books, so he knew a lot about history. Maybe he thought that would happen, and that helped him commit to leaving after his second term, which would be good for the Republic, he said. But he was at the height of his power. He had had some controversies, to be sure, with the Congress and the conservatives in his party. But there's no question, Coy, he could have been reelected.
In 08,
But since he couldn't be reelected, the next best thing was to choose his successor and make sure that person got elected.
And who was that?
William Howard Taft, who had served as Secretary of War in the Roosevelt administration, and was particularly important in the development of the Philippines.
And so, like Bush the First, that was sort of seen as the third Roosevelt term.
Exactly. Well, that's what Roosevelt hoped, but Taft proved to be a big disappointment to Teddy Roosevelt. Roosevelt, after he left the presidency, went off to hunt in Africa, and he got word almost immediately that Roosevelt was that Taft was betraying the progressive cause. And in particular, he got this word from one of his favorite proteges, Gifford Pinchot, who was a leader of the conservation movement and was Roosevelt's top political aide in conservation reform, which was extremely important to Roosevelt. And Pinchot was writing him, Taft doesn't seem to have any principles. B, which is even worse, he's extremely weak, and he is caving in to the political friends of industrialism. Now, this wasn't quite fair to Taft. We won't go into all the details of this. What happened is when Roosevelt was in Africa, the progressive movement begins to crest, gain momentum. The trusts are under siege. Yet Taft doesn't really get out ahead of this parade.
Yeah.
And thus he appears to be much more conservative than he is. So getting wind of this, Roosevelt says, well, if he's betrayed my trust, then maybe I can run again for that. He said, just because I turned down that third cup of coffee in 1908 doesn't mean I never wanted to drink.
We are talking with UVA's Sidney Mokas. His new book is Theodore Roosevelt, The Progressive Party and the Transformation of American Democracy. We'll be giving away a free signed copy here at the end of the interview, so stay tuned. Your chance to get this fascinating brand new book hot off the presses. Sidney, before we talk about Roosevelt's return to run for president in 1912, help me understand. He's a Republican.
Right.
But he's a progressive.
Right.
Sounds sort of like a modern day liberal.
Yeah.
Were the Republicans the liberals of the day?
No, both parties at this time were split between Republican and conservative wings. And also, both parties kind of owed their structure to the 19th century. That is, they were very decentralized and they relied on patronage, on the spoil system. Neither party really bought in to progressive reform. So the progressive movement essentially forms outside of the two-party system. And progressive leaders like Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson try to establish themselves independently of their parties to form a constituency that isn't dependent on the party coalition.
Yeah.
And this Roosevelt did this in part when he was president, but when he came back and challenged the incumbent Taft in the 1912 election, he really runs not as a part of the progressive Republican faction, but as somebody who stands above parties, as somebody who has a direct connection with the people.
Yeah.
And in fact, that becomes a leading part of the progressive program. Not only do they want social and industrial justice, they also want to reestablish the presidency, as Roosevelt put it, as the steward of the public welfare, as someone who carries out the public welfare through his direct connection with the people.
And this was something new in 1912, this presidential campaign. This was really something new,
right?
Wasn't it?
It was
that
new.
Only Roosevelt really could have done at the time.
Right. For example, Coy, primaries were never important. These candidate-centered campaigns we have that are central now to our presidential selection process. Primaries were not important until 1912. Roosevelt challenges Taft for the nomination, but he knows he's not going to get the support of the party regulars who are going to dominate the Republican convention in the summer of 1912. So he challenges Taft to a primary contest, and he calls for all the states to establish direct primary contests as a way of choosing their delegates to the national convention. Not all of them do, but there were six that had it before 1912, six added it in response to Roosevelt's call, and these are important states. And so you get what appears to be, and is covered by the press as, a popular referendum on Roosevelt's insurgent candidacy and Taft's first term.
So Taft becomes the Republican nominee.
Taft becomes the Republican nominee, but this is the first time primaries are important in a presidential election. There aren't enough of them to get Roosevelt destroys Taft in the primaries, wins most of them, and even wins the Ohio primary, which is Taft's home state. So if we're talking about the situation now where the primaries dictate the nominee, there's no way Taft gets the nomination. But the party organizations dictated in 1912. So Taft gets the nomination. Roosevelt bolts the Republican convention and forms with his political allies the Progressive Party, which becomes a third party organization.
Who was the Democratic nominee at the time?
Woodrow Wilson gets the Democratic nomination.
There he is.
But that happens after Roosevelt's bolt, and the Democrats probably would have nominated someone more conservative than Wilson. Wilson too was a version of progressive statesman. But they feel if they don't nominate a progressive themselves, in light of what's happened at the Republican convention, this third party is going to win the election. Roosevelt's going to become president again. And so they nominate Wilson, hoping that he'll get enough progressive votes and combined with the split in the Republican Party, so he'll get elected president.
Interesting. It almost makes it sound like all the folks in the middle in America were the progressives.
That's a way of thinking about it. Yeah. Although Teddy Roosevelt was to the left of Wilson. Wilson ran as a very moderate progressive, as a Jeffersonian progressive, which sounded kind of like a contradiction in terms. Jefferson believed in natural rights, which includes a right to private property and stuff. Like, Jefferson believed in localism. And so asking the question, as Wilson did, what would Jefferson want in the 20th century, was absolutely absurd for progressives like Roosevelt.
Yeah.
So if the guy in the center is kind of Wilson, and that's why he wins the general
1912
election. But Teddy Roosevelt's insurgency campaign was extraordinarily important. Roosevelt won about 27% of the popular vote. Six states, many of which, some of which were very important, like California and Pennsylvania and Michigan. And so the Progressive Party lost the campaign, but has an enduring effect on American politics.
And we want to talk about that, but before we do, let's listen to Theodore Roosevelt. Where and when is this speech?
This is a speech he gave soon after he announced he was running for the presidency. As he coined a famous phrase in announcing he was going to run. On February 21st, he said, my hat is in the ring. That's the first time. That was an old cowboy saying, indicating that you were ready to fight. And Roosevelt, seeing himself as a cowboy, used this refrain to announce he was entering the contest. And then about a month later, gave this major address in March of 1912 at Madison Square Garden, in a speech which he titled The Right of the People to Rule.
Theodore Roosevelt, 1912.
There is no danger of a revolution in this country, but there is grave discontent and unrest. And in order to remove them, there is need of all the wisdom and probity and deep-seated faith in and purpose to uplift humanity we have at our command. Friends, our task as Americans is to strive for social and industrial justice achieved through the genuine rule of the people. This is our end, our purpose. The methods for achieving the end are merely expedients, to be finally accepted or rejected according as actual experience shows that they work well or ill. But in our hearts, we must have this lofty purpose, and we must strive for it in all earnestness and sincerity, or our work will come to nothing. In order to succeed, we need leaders of inspired idealism, leaders to whom are granted great visions, who dream greatly and strive to make their dreams come true, who can kindle the people with the fire from their own burning souls. The leader for the time being, whoever he may be, is but an instrument to be used until broken and then to be cast aside. And if he is worth his salt, he will care no more when he is broken than a soldier cares when he is sent where his life is forfeit, in order that the victory may be won. In the long fight for righteousness, the watchword for all of us is spend and be spent.
Theodore Roosevelt, 1912. We're talking with UVA's Sidney Milkus about his new book on Theodore Roosevelt in the 1912 presidential election, which changed the course of American democracy. We'll be giving away a free copy of the book at the end of the interview. Sidney, I'm so struck by his voice.
Isn't that
not at all what you would expect Theodore Roosevelt to sound like.
Yeah, I have to say, Coy, I was surprised too, because we have this image of Roosevelt as being rather bombastic, you know, bully, saying bully all the time. And I think that's a great exaggeration. He was a rather sober, cerebral guy with a great, although one with a great deal of energy. In fact, this is one of the few elections in American politics which veers towards political philosophy. These are serious ideas.
I was going to say, he's not really talking about a lot of specific policy issues
No. And here you see a couple of things that are really important about the 1912 campaign and its insurgency and how it transformed American democracy. The point is to shift the attention from political parties and more local politics, which includes the Congress, to the presidency, and a more nationalistic moral politics. And so you hear the term righteousness, and you hear Roosevelt saying that leaders must be now visionaries. And he says that we must have a direct connection with the people. This is not about Teddy Roosevelt. I embody the will of the people. And he's got a phrase in there, spend and be spent. And that comes from Paul, the second letter of Corinthians, where Paul admonishes hedonism. And Roosevelt would repeat that line at the very end of his campaign, once again appearing in Madison Square Garden. And so the thrust of this Progressive Party campaign is to establish presidential politics and the presidency as the center of a new, more moralistic politics, a moralistic politics that would play out both domestically and internationally. The one other thing, if I could just mention one other thing,
sure,
that's fascinating about this clip, is this, as part of this direct connection that Roosevelt wants to establish with public opinion, takes advantage of the new media in American politics. You know, today we have the internet revolution. Then you had a revolution in things like phonographs and movies. And this was a phonograph that was taped for Roosevelt by Thomas Edison, the famous inventor, who was a great supporter of Roosevelt, because he said, Roosevelt's engaged in political experimentation just as I'm engaged, and I'm good for the country.
So this was a new media campaign
This is the first campaign where there's a systematic effort through things like the audio clip you just played and movies to appeal directly to people in a way that emphasized the candidate, not political parties.
To go around the party machines.
To go around the party. Now, that was essential for Roosevelt to do that, is because he was a third party candidate.
But it was also his message.
But it was his message, and Woodrow Wilson bought into it too. So Woodrow Wilson hardly mentions that he's the candidate for the Democratic Party in his media campaign.
Yeah. And of course, we see that today. Or where do we see that today? That's really how presidential politics is today. It's so much about the personality, reaching out to directly connect with you.
Right.
Sitting in your car or on your couch at home.
Yeah.
That I'm talking to you. And forget the parties, forget the party bosses and the machines, and let's have a conversation, and I.
Well, as revolutionary as the television seemed to be with John Kennedy's presidency, and the internet seems to be with Barack Obama's presidency, so movies and the use of these phonographs appear to be revolutionary in the 1912 election. Americans had never heard before this, or seen, most Americans, presidential candidates or presidents. And so this is just as revolutionary for its time as we consider things like the internet. This is why I wrote this book.
Yeah.
This is the first time there's like a systematic effort by candidates to establish a direct connection with the American people.
Up until then, they would just rely on the party machines and the bosses.
Right. Now, this has a positive side to it, that it does present the possibility.
It's a totally new democracy.
Yeah, you emancipate presidential candidates and presidents from the party organizations, which force compromise and are subject to brokering and things like that. The negative side of this, and the criticism's right there from the beginning, is it lends itself to a kind of cult of personality, where the ambition of the candidate becomes all important, to the detriment of attention to things like real reform or a vital connection, a meaningful connection with the American. And you mentioned before, Coy, that in that wonderful clip, It's so broad. It's so visionary. I represent righteousness. Invest your political faith in me.
He talks of the lofty purpose.
Invest, and I will pursue the lofty purposes you believe in. And if you look at President Obama's speeches, both when he ran for the presidency and presently, his speeches are very much like those that were revolutionary when Teddy Roosevelt gave them in 1912.
Sidney Milkus is a professor of politics at the University of Virginia, assistant director for academic programs at the Miller Center. His new book is Theodore Roosevelt, the Progressive Party, and the Transformation of American Democracy. Sidney, congratulations. It's quite an accomplishment. It's a beautiful book.
Oh, that's very nice. It's very nice of you to say that, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.